Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Tourism is one area in the city of Hamilton that I'm always fascinated by because I always wonder what, if you have someone, if you're bringing someone here to the city, where do you take them? There are cities where it's super obvious where you would go. Hamilton, to me, has always been one of those interesting ones about what do you do with people. Ryan McHugh is the manager of tourism and events for the city of Hamilton. Joins me now. How are you, Ryan?
I'm excellent. Thank you for having me, Scott.
Well, really appreciate it. The reason we're having Ryan on right now is because later this week, the Visitor Experience Center, the tourism hub, I guess we'll call it, for the city of Hamilton is going to have a grand reopening. You can go there, I guess, and get the very ideas that I'm talking about here.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those of your listeners who may not be familiar, the Tourism Hamilton Visitor Experience Center is located on the ground floor of the historic Lister Block building at the corner of James Street North and King William. And as Tourism Hamilton, our role really is to drive visitors to the city. And then once they're there, really connect them with our attractions, our restaurants, our great entertainment venues. So really, this is us providing, you know, the best information to help drive more business to our tourism stakeholders. We have our grand opening, as you said, on Friday, and we were able to, toward the tail end of COVID restrictions there, leverage a federal grant, which allowed us to do a complete renovation of our visitor experience center. So it was just a top to bottom refresh. And in addition to cosmetically making it quite stunning, we were able to really rethink the way we offer this service. So Scott, if you remember perhaps in the past, you picture a visitor center, you picture walls of brochures.
Yes.
The issue with that is the second you print a brochure, it's out of date, right? So
okay.
As Tourism Hamilton, we're really trying to drive visitors to our Tourism Hamilton website. So at tourismhamilton.com. Because that's current, that's information we can make sure, as an event changes, we can update as well. So it's something where how do we use those digital tools to help guide visitors to that information? Because in the past, people tried, well, here's an iPad. But if you're coming into that space, you want a personal interaction. So a lot of great technologies. An example, if you picture like Election Day, John King on CNN, he has the touch screen. So really, it's a technology like that where you come in, you have our staff there who are really knowledgeable about the best attractions, where to eat, where to go to see the game or the concert. And we help, guide you through a facilitated discussion using the digital channels. And so that's something that just leverage our web content and getting away from more of the paper-based. And this way, we can track, well, how many referrals have we had to this restaurant and this attraction? So we can really measure the economic impact. And one piece as well that's just I think your viewers really should check out, in addition to coming and seeing where to eat, where to play in Hamilton, we've partnered with our civic museums, and they've implemented some museum space as well. So essentially, we have a great civic museums, example Dundurn Castle, but it's hard to tell any story other than the Dundurn Castle story with that backdrop. So this is a neutral space right in our downtown core, where they can turn over different exhibits throughout the year to tell various Hamilton stories. So in addition to coming and getting some merchandise, finding out where to eat, where to play, you can also learn a little bit about Hamilton, whether you're a visitor or a local.
So let me go back to the very first thing when I introduced this, because one of the challenges, I think, I mean, maybe you'll think otherwise, but if you are taking someone to Toronto, it's the CN Tower probably, or maybe Castle Loma. If you're going to Niagara, obviously it's Niagara Falls, or, pick a city. There's usually one or two things that are easy tourist attractions. What is that in Hamilton? Come here, what is the thing that people are going to?
So one thing, and especially we're seeing through COVID and out COVID, it's our waterfalls. And, those really are our CN Tower, our Eiffel Tower, if you will. And we just see through the activity of traffic on our site, people really want to experience our trails, experience our waterfalls. And if you go to our website, and we can share information, of course, at the actual visitor experience center of how to do that safely, where to park, where to walk, where not to walk. So that is really one, but also, as you're aware, we have great concerts, music, sports. So, if there's events happening on, we're certainly getting a lot of tourists coming into town to enjoy those. But in terms of, what are people looking for? It's a lot of those outdoor recreational activities. And then, of course, there's the Royal Botanical Gardens, the Warplane Heritage Museum, We have African Lion Safari, Dundurn Castle. So there are some which are go-to attractions, which of course we can provide more information whether on our website at tourismhamilton.com or if you visited our visitor center on James Street North.
Do people know that ahead of time? And again, I go back, let me use the Toronto example. I know everyone around here loves it when we compare ourselves to Toronto. I'm not comparing, but I mean, if you come from Chicago to visit Toronto, you probably have an idea ahead of time of what you're going to go see. Do people know this stuff before they come to Hamilton, or do they find out about these things once they get here?
So it's so generally, of course, not to the extent of Toronto or Chicago or New York, of course, because we're not that big of a city.
Sure.
But generally, we find that's our website. We get a lot of hits in advance, right, where people are doing this research. But to your point, Scott, it really is they're discovering this for themselves. And that's kind of the role we play. It's, hey, what to do in Hamilton? And here it is packaged. We have a downtown guide with our best restaurants and bars. We have we call it our bucket list. So it's the, here's the must do in Hamilton's, but you're right. It's sharing information. It's a bit of an education where some markets, you know, like Niagara Falls, they got the big waterfall. People know it's there and they know why it's there. But in Hamilton, we have a bit of a education. That's why things like our visitor experience center and things like our website are such valuable tools.
That would, it would seem to me though, give you, you're at a disadvantage on the one hand because you don't have those things, but you're also at a bit of a weird advantage because you can, I would think, almost tell people what they should be going to. You can write the script for them as opposed to having it done.
Absolutely. It is a blank slate in that way, Scott. And that is a nice thing for Hamilton, the city who, you know, I would say is having a resurgent. And of course, you know, most cities during COVID had some setbacks, but generally we're on a upward trajectory and we really get to tell our own story and help set that narrative. And, you know, the days of when I think Hamilton, I think smokestacks, we're hoping to move past that. And, you know, when you get to tell a narrative about waterfalls and beautiful trails and, you know, vibrant entertainment and music. So that's something we take great pride in. And I think it's a really important role to educate visitors on all that Hamilton has to offer.
We only have a few seconds left, but does that put extra pressure on those people and groups that are running things that could be tourist attractions? Because you could get a lot more people there because people are open when they come to this city. If you just bump up your efforts and make it even a little bit better, that you could be the one drawing everybody there.
Yeah, it really is. The business is there for the taking. And for me, you know, that's a great problem to have, the fact that our attractions are busy, our restaurants are busy. You know, if I've done that, I feel our team at Tourism Hamilton and the city more broadly have done our job. So, you know, absolutely. It's something we work very closely with the various attractions and sports franchises and entertainment venues just to make sure we're all current and working together towards that same outcome.
That is Ryan McHugh. He is the manager of tourism events for the city of Hamilton. It is this Friday that the Visitor Experience Center reopens. If you want to go see it, you've maybe never been there. I don't know if I say probably never been there, but maybe at the Lister Block. You can, next time you're down there, go take a look. Ryan, thanks for doing this today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Take care, Scott.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Sitting beside me, Steve Foxcroft, international man of renaissance-ness. But he is the effervescent Steve Foxcroft now, the host of the Sound of Music Parade from the other day on cable TV, and like you do a little bit of everything.
I am that guy, a man of a thousand disguises.
You are, but effervescent. I don't know anyone who ever has ever been described as effervescent before.
I do not use words I can't spell to describe myself.
I don't know if I can spell that either, honestly. It would take you a few tries. That's why we have spell check on our phones now.
Master of the House, I can play that on the piano. That's my another
hidden
talent.
Don't give the answer away yet.
Don't do that. But I can play on the piano.
All
and
right.
Hey, Don Robertson, yes. I have big shoes to fill.
You have big shoes to fill. Well, not only that, but he's got a gigantic head, so you've got a big hat to fill as well.
Right. The last time I had shoes this big, I think it was about 1992.
Okay.
Whatever was the Dream Team, like the second edition of it, was in Toronto for the Hamilton for the World Championship.
Yep.
So they asked us to go ref the games, or the practices, the Dream Team practices, because they were almost tougher than the games when they would scrimmage amongst themselves. So we go in, and I'm sitting on the sidelines because they would do drills and then they'd have a scrimmage and we'd ref. But Shaquille O'Neal's shoes were sitting there, his flip-flops. So I put both of my feet into one flip-flop.
I'm amazed that companies would
make those? And they must have been custom made just for him. I'll say this about, so, and you've covered a ton of basketball. You've mm-hmm. reffed and worked in basketball for years and years, of course, your dad and refereeing and everything else, the whole family. For years, when I would go cover basketball, and you remember when they used to, NBA guys used to come, they used to have games here in mm-hmm. Cops. They used to have a preseason game, usually.
Every year.
Anybody who was over 7 feet was legitimately the height that was posted. When Ralph Sampson would come mm-hmm. in at 7'4", you look and you go, yeah, that's a 7'4" guy.
Right.
I was down in Houston one time for the Hamilton Bulldogs, and what's his name? Houston Rockets.
Oh. Well, Ralph Sampson played there too, but
Yao Ming. Yao Ming, thank you. Yao Ming happened to walk by when I was interviewing a Bulldog. He's 7'7" or 7'6". Enormous. If you're over 7 feet tall, you are every bit the height that they list you at. Right. If you're under 7 feet, I had guys who were listed at 6'8", and I'm looking them eye to eye and going, you are not 6'8".
That's right.
There is no chance. You are getting the WWE height boost here. Hulk Hogan was not 6'8". Right,
but he had the pythons.
Yeah, but it's amazing to me how some of these things. Well, let's give him an extra few inches because it sounds better.
Exactly. But those were neat days back when we had a game a year at Cops Coliseum, and I think the original floor they used early on was the floor they used in the 76 Olympics.
Was it?
Yeah, and they brought it in from Montreal, and it was shorter than regulation. And then Cops bought their own floor eventually. Remember, it was that orange color the border, and it was used for years too. I don't know where that's gone to now, but now it seems like the Raptors have about 3 floors they use.
You want to know something? I when they finally get around to doing the construction at First Ontario Centre for the renovations, they should have a camera crew when they go through that thing, because they're going to find stuff probably in corners of that arena. Now, it's only 35 years old, mm-hmm. 37. But I bet you there's stuff there they're going to stumble across. They're going to go, where did this come from?
There's some great memories there.
Sure there is.
Before we move along, Don Robertson, again, the big shoes to fill. I put my shoes in. Shaq comes over and goes, hey, what are you doing with my flip-flops? And I've never been so scared. And then he smiles wide like he was joking with me. And thankfully he was. Yeah. I was actually scared for a minute because he is
a large man.
He's intimidating.
He is a large man and one of the friendly, I mean, by all accounts, I've not met him, but one of the friendliest and most jovial people around. But yeah, he, imagine if he was curmudgeonly or just mean. That's a guy that could do some damage.
Yeah, he could just toss you. No problem.
By the way, if you don't know Steve Foxcroft, who was talking here, he is a basketball official. He is a football official. He is a TV guy. He is a little bit of this. He's a little bit of that. And as I say, he does parades as well, which he is branching into all new territory now.
That Sound of Music Festival parade was a lot of fun. We've done it for years.
They had the Flock of Seagulls at the Sound of Music.
They had Flock of Seagulls there.
Unbelievable.
Men Without Hats, Safety Dance from that takes me back to when I was a kid.
Oh, no kidding.
And the Spoons, Burlington's own The Spoons.
Remember,
and it was dynamite.
A few years ago, for the 100th anniversary of the Grey Cup, when it was in Toronto, on Front Street, they had closed all of Front Street for the Grey Cup Festival. And I'm walking along there one day, and Platinum Blonde is playing. And I am looking at Platinum Blonde, and I know the songs, and I know the band, and I've put the two and two together, and I'm looking at one or two of them, and I'm like, wait a second, you're bald. I don't remember Platinum Blonde. I mean, we all know back in the 80s, the hair and everything else, but same with Flock of Seagulls now.
It's exactly that. They've aged a bit, but it still takes you back, and those songs are how we grew up. And, you mentioned the Bulldogs and that. You and I worked a long time ago together doing Bulldogs game.
My very, very, so this is going to probably be, I don't know if this is of any interest to people listening, but we'll do it anyway. My very first time on television ever was doing that game on Cable 14. And I remember there was you who was hosting. There was me. There was Rick Natras. There was Glenn Allen, who's a big guy. Yeah. And there was one other person who will remain nameless, who's a very small little person, relatively speaking to the rest of us, who are all 6 foot something. And we were all sitting on these chairs, and you introduced Rick Natras first because he was closest to you, and then I think me, and then Glenn Allen. And the camera kept panning, and we got to the last person, who was the smallest guy. The hydraulic on his chair had given out, and all and the camera had to go down, and all you could see was his chin on top of the desk.
Exactly.
And we started laughing so hard we couldn't even do the. It was so ridiculous, yeah. And he didn't know what to do because that thing just had just given out right when the camera came.
We're going to go all these directions. I know you want to talk about stuff, but we gave Michael Anlauer his start.
We
saved the Bulldogs back then and bought the team. My dad put together all these people, like everyone in Hamilton owned a piece of the team, right?
There were about 10 people, yeah. You're right.
And then the next year or two, it was within a year or two where Anlauer came to my dad and said, forget about you guys.
I want it.
I want to own the whole thing
by myself.
I'm
sure they all want it out.
Yeah, exactly. We were all like, are you serious? No problem. Because we saved the Bulldogs. There was that committee together. Saved the Bulldogs. We covered the games. Meanwhile, the team did good, too.
The team did really well. And another time we were doing TV, I remember, was the longest game in AHL history. We were doing that game on TV, and it was like, okay, you know, like some of us have to get up in the morning. Yeah. It was going on and on.
But and we were running out of things to talk about between all the periods.
Yeah,
the
Rick Natras could keep us going with stories. So speaking of longest games, I will tell you, last night's Ticats game felt like one of the longest games ever. It's very early, and I'm not suggesting that what we're seeing now is the finished product, but right now, they stink.
You try and sum it up and you keep going with different things. And I guess I keep coming back to unacceptable. Like if Ange Mosco was around right now, unacceptable.
That's what he'd say.
You know?
So, and Steve Milton has pointed out in this piece today that this is now the 13th time in 18 seasons they've started 0-2. How is that possible? How is it possible? Because it's not all the same guys.
Right.
It's all new guys. And yet year after year after... Now, they generally turn it around. They often win the East. It's not like, that's why I say it's way too early to make any kind of judgments. But how is it that the same organization can consistently start so poorly?
Boy, you're asking me to rewind a little bit to go over all these years, and I'm just still reeling from the last 2 weeks, right? Like against Winnipeg, first game, you're on the road, you kind of go, okay, but we got Toronto with like 9 new starters, a quarterback that hasn't played more than 10 snaps. We're going to go in there and we'll write the ship, using an Argo expression, but we'll write the ship. And then not only did we not write the ship, we looked bad.
They look very bad. The offense looks terrible. The defense doesn't stop anybody right now. In fact, last week when they were playing against Winnipeg, had they not had 6 or 7 really good minutes with special teams and defense where Winnipeg kind of went to sleep, you'd be looking at 2 blowout losses to start the year. I mean, already the offense is looking horrible, but at least last week that short burst from the special teams and defense made it look kind of respectable.
One of the things, too, that I'm worried about is Calgary made a decision on Bo Levi Mitchell. And, like, Schiltz came in and looked, and I know it's kind of garbage time and all that, but he looked better. And I'm going, is he recovered, is he able to throw the ball?
See, he's thrown some deep balls and actually overthrown guys. So right. I'm not as worried. This is not like, to me, this is not like back in, what year did Jason Moss come here from Edmonton and left his shoulder in Alberta?
Yeah, and left shoulder out there. But
he was done. Mm-hmm. When he got here, he could not throw a Paul ball more than 20 yards. And you were like, what is going on? I don't see that. But even if it's not physical, has he regressed? And again, it's way too early. Mm-hmm. It's way too early. This is an 18-game season. It's 2 games, and they always turn things around. But it's not been impressive.
You know, I'm liking it to playoff hockey, basketball, even baseball, you could say, where the series doesn't start until someone loses at home. So I'm going to give them that a bit and sort of go, okay, now we have a home game coming up. Short turnaround, blah, blah, blah. Montreal plays us tough all the time. Montreal has new ownership. They seem to have a little bounce in their step. They're coming off a bye. So I'm scared. I'm scared now. I'm not pushing the panic button yet, but I'm scared. But this is a must-win game in week three. Mm. Can it be?
No. Because here's the thing. I really believe. I mean, in the East, especially looking at how bad Ottawa looks, and Edmonton is not going to be crossing over anytime. So you're maybe got anyway. You could go 0-9 to start this year, and you'll still make the playoffs in the East.
So you subscribe to everything changed at Labor Day, and the season starts at Labor Day, really,
yeah,
especially
which I think
in
is,
the East.
Which I said to Scott Thompson earlier today, maybe the worst advertising slogan any league has ever had. The first half of our year doesn't matter. Now buy a ticket.
Yeah.
It's like the worst advertising ever, but it's true. You could go 0-9. Now, not always in the West, but in the East, you could go 0-9 and make the playoffs.
Make the playoffs and then win three games.
And then win
yeah.
two.
Yeah,
and,
two games.
And get to the
yeah,
Grey Cup game
the Grey
and then
Cup.
Win the third. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, as Don Roberts, I'm filling in for Don Robertson, so he'll say something like this. And I know the Cats brass, they're going to think, well, we're going to start a win streak starting Friday, right?
Sure.
Well, Don Robertson would tell you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We can't win all the games if we don't start on Friday.
I do absolutely expect that this team is not going to be challenging the 2002, was it 2003? Mm. What team was it that almost went winless? That's not this
yeah,
team.
That, yeah.
This team has talent. This team is going to do fine. They'll be in the playoffs. There's no chance. I'm fully expecting that once things get rolling, that this team is probably going to be playing in the Grey Cup at home. That's kind of how I think they will figure it out somehow. But as I say, I don't get it. And one other thing that you mentioned about Bo Levi Mitchell and, you know, Calgary had made a decision on him. Watching yesterday with the Argos, they've got a new quarterback. Mm-hmm. Other teams have made decisions. Hamilton has a track record now of chasing the guy who was the guy. Jason Moss and Casey Printers. And Bo Levi Mitchell and
David Archer back in the day.
But guys who have been stars elsewhere, mm-hmm. and then they get dazzled by their former greatness, and they come here and they're not as good. Who are the guys who have been really good here? Well, over the years, yeah, Danny McManus. Mm-hmm. He had been that. He falls into that category. But other teams all develop a guy. So you've got Chad Kelly in Toronto, who mm-hmm. I don't know what he's going to be, but he sure looked good yesterday.
You know, I thought yesterday, too, he had NFL game numbers, right? When you look at his stat line, 213, what was it, 16 of 23, something like that. It was like an NFL number, where the week before, Collaros put up CFL numbers, like 370 yards or something like that. But he managed the game.
But I just wonder, and this is the point, I just wonder, okay, so Bo Levi Mitchell left the game last night with a quad or groin or some kind mm-hmm. of injury. Orlando Stanier describes it as lower body. He's following the Pat Quinn school of injuries. But if it's a short week this week because they play Friday, if Matt Schultz has to play and Matt Schultz plays well, here's the problem the Ticats now have. You may have... I like Matt Schultz.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is a good-looking young quarterback. Mm-hmm. He may turn out to be a really good quarterback. Is there any possible way, though, that you can play him when you're paying Bo Levi Mitchell $500,000 to be your starter?
And I agree with you. You cannot. There's 100% no way can you do that. So that's one of those ones where you say to Bo, you're still hurt. Like, you know, you're growing, whatever it is, you're still hurt. But
you need him. You need him to come back and mm-hmm. get some reps in, so you can't have him sit for too long.
That's right.
And I don't see any likelihood. In fact, this might be the most shocking thing ever. If, let's say, Matt Schultz comes in and plays really well for four or five mm-hmm. games, I don't think it'll go that long. Could you ever see the Ticats saying, you know, it's before Labor Day, we can cut Bo Levi Mitchell and save that money and put it to something? I would say no chance. No chance.
Yeah, I think their eggs are in his basket. I can't see it, too. I agree with you there. 100% you can't do that.
No. But we'll see. I mean, as I say, we'll see what Schultz does. I like the guy, but like so many other times, it seems we don't want to develop someone. When Danny McManus was in the later mm-hmm. days of his career and was, you know, banged up and was slowing down, they had, now what was his name? He played, he was the backup to, he was the backup at Boston College to the starter for the Falcons, to Matt Ryan.
The They had Cody Ledbetter.
It wasn't Cody. I'll think of the guy's name. But yeah. They had this. They had this. This backup quarterback who, I don't know whether he was going to become a CFL quarterback or not. But Ron Lancaster, God rest his soul, would not. The team was out of the playoff race. McManus is banged up like crazy, and it's like, why are you not using these last three or four or five games of the year to see what you've got for next year? And he kept running Danny McManus out there. And it's the same kind of thing. It's like, what, this is something that the franchise has done over the years, is you've got young guys who may be something or may not be something, but then you bring someone in to take all the playing time, and we never know.
That's right. And it's so frustrating. Like, I think Mike Carrigan was the last guy and a Grey Cup winning guy again. It's like the two guys you go back to me anyway, like, is what you said, McManus. Then you had Mike Carrigan. Before that, Tom Clements, right? Like, those are the best quarterbacks we've had. Go back to Chuck Ealy, too, I guess. But
Quentin Porter is
Quentin
who I was
Porter,
thinking of.
Yes, that's
Quentin
it.
Porter is who I'm thinking of.
Right. But we never found out.
And then, and look, and my suggestion isn't flawless, because, you know, they thought they had something with Timmy Chang, and it turned out that was a guy who there wasn't anything there. So it's not that you're guaranteed. The backup is always the most popular player in the city, because everyone's looking, going, hey, bring him in, he'll be great. And they're not always. But at least give the person a chance.
The one thing, getting back to Bo for just a second, the one thing you said that I thought of more coming out of game one than game two was, yeah, he did miss a lot of deep balls. They had like four or five opportunities for deep balls where he overthrew or underthrew.
Yeah.
Didn't see that last night as much, right? In fact, he threw one away that was picked off.
Yeah, like, a little too much
was,
on
yeah.
It.
But that's where I guess I'm leaning to, or I'll accept your point of view with Bo there.
That it's touch more than arm.
Yeah, let's hope so. But it's a different throw. Like the deep ball, you got to throw it. But it's more of a lob ball too, right? Where I want him to be able to throw that out. In the Canadian game, you got to throw it on a rope to the sideline.
Yeah,
right?
You got to step into it and heave it. And we'll see. Like I look at this and I think to myself, you know, if we're a third of the way in, if we're six games in and the offense is still sputtering along, then, you know, even though we're still not at the nine-game Labor Day mark, then you go, okay, maybe there's an issue here. But maybe I'm just blindly optimistic or looking too much at tradition or history when I see every year they go through the same thing. But they just bound to figure it out.
And then they play with their pants on fire after Labor Day, like last year, to get in. And then it's the CFL model, though. Nothing wrong with it. Win your couple games, you're in the Grey Cup.
Yeah, and you know, you're hosting this year. And that, more than anything, that's probably why what I'm talking about developing a guy, it's not this year's model. You bring in Bo Levi Mitchell because you're hosting. You didn't win the Grey Cup last time you were hosting. You got to win it this time. They're the team with the longest streak. It's the last chance you're going to be hosting it for who knows how long. You've got to win it this year. You got to be there at least. At the very least, you've got to be in the game just to make that whole week and festival and everything else really fly.
Yeah, and the one thing they got to do, I think, they have to do something before Labor Day. Like we talked about, the season starts after Labor Day, but the good weather games are now before Labor Day, and they got to do something in the home games to keep the crowd engaged. They got to get the Hamilton fans engaged in this Grey Cup season to want to come to the ballpark, want to support the team. So that's the only thing, though, that I worry about, is got to win this Friday for that. Like, do it for the hometown crowd and to keep them engaged.
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, as I say, they look terrible. I here's the prediction, and I don't do predictions, but I don't think Bo Levi Mitchell's playing this week, because unless he has a miracle recovery. He looked like a guy who, in a short week, it would be tough, but maybe. But if he doesn't, I think Matt Schultz comes in, and I think Matt Schultz looks really good. Then you've got yourself a quandary.
Right. That's what'll happen for sure, because as long as they do good and with the hometown crowd into it and behind them, that'll make the defense better on its own. The opponent, being
isn't
Montreal,
as
isn't as good. That's going to make it better on their own. Schultz, all he's got to do is enough. Don't make the mistakes. Don't turn the ball over. Manage the game like Chad Kelly did yesterday. Yep. Then they win. Now everything's good again, except maybe a quarterback controversy.
Yeah, imagine we have after getting Bo Levi Mitchell in the offseason, you have a quarterback controversy after game three. Not what anyone thought, but all right, Steve, I got to read you the first line from a story here from Yahoo Finance, and I had to read this twice to believe what I was reading. For the first time in the 55-year history of the Special Olympics World Games, fans and viewers will be able to wager on the beloved international sporting event. What do you think about gambling on the Special Olympics?
That is beyond crazy. That is...
You can gamble on track and field, basketball, cycling, powerlifting, soccer, and swimming.
I'm just shaking my head on that one. It's... up there with professional wrestling, like betting on professional wrestling.
But it's worse than that, isn't it? Because you've got athletes here who are all challenged intellectually or developmentally in some way. And they're trying their best. I'm not suggesting otherwise. No. They're giving everything they got, but I'm not. It's different from other sports. It's intentionally different from other events.
Oh, man. That is going way beyond. And you are right. You set that up perfectly, by the way, to say it's not what you're thinking. I wasn't thinking that at all. I can't even. I'm speechless on a radio show. That's crazy. No, you can't do that. That's just not right. And it's in Yahoo Finance.
Well, here's what they say. Just like any other sport, we've created Special Olympics odds behind weeks and weeks of research. These are incredibly skilled athletes competing on an even playing field, and our odds makers will give these World Games the same level of attention and respect as the Super Bowl. So I'm reading this and I'm thinking to myself, okay, there's two ways to take this. One is maybe if people are wagering on it, they're going to pay more attention and you will help build it up. Okay. That's a possibility because we've seen that with other sports. I mean, heaven knows, March Madness is what it is because of gambling. But I still can't get my head around the fact that it's the Special Olympics.
And you also need a platform to, usually if you're going to bet on it, you want to watch it, right? And I haven't ever tuned in to much Special Olympic coverage in any media platform. So that is difficult in itself. And then what you just read there, the term even playing field. How do they define that? What is an even playing field? Where you just said.
I think what they're probably meaning, if I'm reading between the lines, that may be a shot that nobody's doing steroids or something in this, and therefore you don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. That's my interpretation of what that line means. I don't know what their interpretation meant to be, but
that's. That's just
it seems we've reached the very quickly reached the end of the road in gambling if we're at Special Olympics already.
That is very difficult to be comfortable with. And is there limits? Like what you know how Drake and Holyfield, the money guy, the boxer.
Oh, Mayweather.
Money Mayweather. You know how they're known for outrageous wagers that they place. And even that mattress guy, the guy that's on the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So what if they go into Special Olympics events, track and field, and put $1 million wager on? I just can't see that being business savvy at the very least for these books.
It just somehow seems to me, and others may differ entirely, but it seems to me that you're I don't know, not tainting, that's not the right word, but it just seems, it seems wrong because it seems like that's not, pure winning is not what the Special Olympics is supposed to be. And don't be confused, but not you, but don't, for people, this is not the Paralympics. The Paralympics is entirely different. Right. That is, you are supposed to win, you are training to win, and I know you are in Special Olympics too, but again, very different. This is people with various challenges and delays. It's not the same.
Right. I'm involved in the Wizard Foundation, a group of guys who started, run by Bob Nicholson, former Hockey Canada, Edmonton Oilers, Toronto Argonaut. He's like me. He's got a million titles. And we raise money every year through events for the Special Olympics. And you're right. Like the kids that we bring to our events and all of that, you just can't see them. It's what you just said. You can't see them being involved in like, oh, I'm going to wager on what he's doing in the summer track and field meet. Like,
well, can you imagine when we get to the point now where people are scouting the training?
Yeah.
And again, maybe that's ideal. Maybe that actually is great because you're now going to make so many more people tune in to watch it. It becomes a much bigger viewer thing, and maybe TV ratings go through the roof. And I don't know.
About this? Like, we see the professional athletes that get heckled and so on and so forth. So say you've lost $100 and then you start berating a special Olympian for not crossing the finish line first or something like that. It's just not right on many levels. And that, to me, is the biggest level right there, that example.
Yeah, what if... Okay, so I'm going to show my ignorance here for just a second because I haven't watched every sport in Special Olympics that closely. You see highlights and I've...
And you know the type of individual that it is.
So what if, like, are they that strict with the rules in every single event? I truly don't know. It just seems to me you are just asking for something here that you're not intending.
It can, yeah, because it can go down a good path but quickly turn down a negative path, I think, where these kids get something out of it and they're treated special and they're just
it's different. It's intended to be different. It is different. It's wonderful. I don't know that we need to
introduce wagering into it.
Anyway, let me know. You can text us 905-645-3221. What do you think about wagering on Special Olympics? That's
Don Robertson, if he was here, he would lose it on that one. He would give you a Don Robertson answer.
Well, I got a Steve Foxcroft answer
there
instead.
You go.
Steve, I don't know if you got to see the highlights or watch the whole thing, but as is now the custom, the Vegas Golden Knights had their Stanley Cup parade and everything else, and it appeared that most of the members of the Vegas Golden Knights are going to need to have their stomachs pumped afterwards.
Along with half the city.
Yeah, but some of those players
they were gone.
And so my thought on this as I was watching this are these, like, way over the top, incredibly drunken Stanley Cup or NBA celebrations, are they fun and charming and quirky, or are they just kind of obnoxious and kind of, I don't know, stupid?
So you got me on this one because I'll be forthright up front and say the drinking aspect and people changing their personality and all that just doesn't fly with me ever. Now, it seems lately, more and more in the last few years, you've seen it's become more public eye, right? Like,
well, it's
like
now
they're
the
in
thing.
Fountains. Yeah, they're it's the thing to do.
Yeah, get hammered as you possibly can, and
and act like that. Yeah. Like, act like it. So, and it's probably happened for many more years than we've been privy to in the public, but now it seems to be the norm of, like, try and top one
another. Ovechkin getting into the fountain and stuff. But, I mean, I just, like, again, I don't want to be the old stodgy guy, but I'm trying to think back to, no, let's go way back, like 1967, Dave Keon wearing a suit and tie, driving in the convertible, just holding the cup down, or even in Toronto. Like, in Montreal, I can't fathom Yvon Cornwallier getting into a fountain and giving speeches. Like, now it's different times. I understand. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is now it's all cool. I don't know. It almost seems like we've sort of hit the extent, but everyone keeps trying to push it. But it's like, how much more can you push without dying?
And I've never found it funny, to be honest with you, when someone acts like that and just is beyond comprehension and everything like that. So I've never found it funny. I don't see this funny. I see Vegas as a wonderful place that goes over the top with every party that they throw, which seems to be three a day every day of the year. But this kind of stuff, I just don't care for it. So it's I don't like seeing it. I just think, like, kind of what you said, just it's like when they say you score a goal, act like you've been there before. Not like winning the Stanley Cup is like act like you've been there
before.
Hey,
I don't expect them to be teetotalers.
No.
Right? I don't expect, but you know.
But string a sentence together. Don't go way beyond that.
If you're so drunk that you will wake up in the morning and have no idea what you said to a crowd of 200,000 people, I mean, maybe it's just me. I wouldn't want to do that. But Maybe, you know, like it's getting tons of social media play, so maybe that's all it's about.
When Brett Hull was doing Gloria like that and it was just belligerent and all that, I didn't even find, I love the Gloria theme and them playing the song and all of that. But when he did it, like I always loved the Steve Kerr one in Chicago when he told a story completely sober and he tells the story about, well, Phil called the play and it looked like, you know, I got to bail out Michael again like that. No one was drunk. They were maybe smoking cigars, but and it was funny. I kind of like that celebration.
Yeah, well, it's it is certainly. It seems as though now it is the thing. And to say the Capitals, Alex Ovechkin. I mean, I worried he was going to drown in that fountain.
Yeah.
It seems to be the thing now is let's get as absolutely hammered as we can, and then.
I think I
sound very stodgy when I say that, but nah. I'm
well, maybe it's our age and everything like that. We're at that
age. I'm not saying don't drink out of the cup.
No.
And you're probably, I mean, look, even Tom Brady was hammered at the last thing. And so it's not just hockey and basketball. I mean, it's the new, it seems to be that you celebrate and this is the way you celebrate. And maybe that's just, we got to get used to it because that's what we're going to see.
Yeah, maybe they're athletes and they can bounce back from it better than, because, you know, you often hear people say, well, I can't drink like I used to when I was a kid and
23.
All that. Yeah, we're not, yeah. But even Tom Brady, the footage we saw was afterwards and him kind of leaving the events and all the whole day of it. And it was someone just getting him in his last few steps home and stuff like that. So to that point, even Tom Brady, I think, was at the end of it all, he probably went a little too far. But I just don't care for it. I don't care for it day to day. I just don't like it. But I was just going to say, I do have a connection to them through Chris Davidson Adams, the trainer.
Oh, yeah?
So I've been waiting to email him. I talk to him 3 or 4 times through each year, and I've been waiting to email him, knowing that he's probably not too attentive to emails just yet.
Yeah, the phone may be at the bottom of a fountain somewhere.
Right, exactly.
And Steve, very quickly, you wanted to do a quick shout out here.
Burlington Golf and Country Club hosting the Ontario Amateurs tomorrow and the next day and into Thursday. And my brother, Ronnie Foxcroft, qualified.
There you go.
Along with another good friend, Ben Snyderow. So good luck to them the next
there
few days
go.
At Burlington for the Ontario Amateurs.
You know who didn't qualify?
You and I.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. I'm still on the front nine. I'm the computer that counts the shots broke. It burned up and overheated. Hey, thanks for coming in and doing this today.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.